My name is Peter. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, Patty Allen. So last week we left off with steps 4, 5, 6, and 7. And today we are going to try to cram as much as I can of 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 all in here. So not going to cover as much as I would like to on each of them, but I'm going to make sure that I touch on the things that I felt were most important when I was going through this, and in prayer and meditation, the things that came to me. I did notice, however, because God has a sense of humor, that I wrote a lot of notes in, and I wrote them in yellow highlighter, and I could see them just fine when I wrote them, and they're invisible now. I can't see anything that they say, so thy will, not mine, right? So, the first thing that it says, as soon as we finish step 7, is now we need more action, right? We've gone into action at this point. We've started taking action, letting go of... I'm sorry, I'm on page 76, by the way. I always forget people are following along in the book. So feel free to stop me if you don't know where I am, because I'm going to bounce around. Now we need more action, right? As soon as I get into this action, I'm taking the action of letting go of these defects of character that I have identified in steps 4 and steps 5. And now I'm getting free of them. Now I'm giving them over to God. I'm letting go so that God can do with them as He sees fit. Right? We talked about this before, that not every defect of character necessarily that I have designated as a defect might be a defect in this moment. Right? These are things that I have decided, okay, these are bad, these are defects of character, but at some times maybe God needs me to have ego or lust or whatever in this moment. Right? I'm not the one determining what's a defect and what's not, which is why in the 7-step prayer it says good and bad. I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. My job is to let go of all of it. Right? Every single piece, and God can decide what's good and what's bad, what I need and what I don't. And now we're going into steps 8 and 9, which is where we're making a list and we're getting ready to start making amends, and we become willing to make them all. The first thing that I have right here is faith without works is dead. Right? I can have all of this faith. I can have this connection with God that we have started to get. Like, the way I see it is that when we do 5, 6, and 7, we like crack open this portal, right, to God, like this straight connection, and now we've kind of gotten in there. But now that we're there, if we don't follow it with action and start doing some work, it's going to close, right? I'm going to block it, I'm going to lose it, I'm going to whatever. So this is when we start cleaning up our past, right? And in step 8, we kind of already have our 8th step written. It says right here, we have a list of all persons we have harmed and whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory, right? It's in our sex or harms inventory in our 4th step. So the way that I had it done with me and the way I do it with my sponsees is we organize it into a list in 3 columns, right? And this is just the way I do it. I'm only speaking from my experience. There's tons and tons of ways to do this, but I have my guys organize it into a amends I'm willing to make right now, amends I'm willing to make soon, and amends I'm willing to make later slash never. And I can speak from my amends list, most of the names were in the 3rd column, right? Most of them were there. Most of them are still there. But as time went on and as I started making more of them, I started to become willing to make more of them, right? A lot of these things, as I started to realize, you know, how it feels to make amends, what happens when I make amends, I started to become willing to make more and more and more of them, right? These ones that seem so scary and horrifying and I couldn't imagine why I would ever do it, I start to get why I can do it, right? I start to understand why I might want to do these things, right? Now I almost look at it as rather than I have to make amends, which I do, I also get to make amends. Right, I get to clean up the past. Something that a buddy of mine pointed out to me that was really eye-opening is after I had done my 5th step last time around, I was feeling guilty. I was feeling really bad. You know, I felt a lot of freedom, but I was feeling really, you know, bad about the things that I did and bad about the things that I saw and bad about the things that I learned. And I was like, what's going on? There's supposed to be all this freedom and it's being clouded by this guilt. And my buddy pointed out, it's like, well, now that the resentments have been, you know, removed, now that we're free of these, those resentments were hiding these harms that I did, right? These harms that I did to other people were masked by resentment. Well, I may have done that to you, but I hate you, so it doesn't matter, right? You suck, so it doesn't matter. So all of a sudden that's lifted, it's like, whoa, I did a lot of nasty things. I did a lot of people dirty, right? So now I get to go make that right. I get to go get free of that. And something that my sponsor said to me was that when I'm making amends, I am getting free of this harm that I did, but I'm giving you the opportunity to get free of me, right? This is not an excuse for me to reinsert myself into your life, because there's plenty of people on my amends list, and I'm sure most other people, that I'd love to reinsert myself back into their lives, but that's not what I'm doing here, right? I'm doing this as an opportunity to you. And if you want me back in your life, that's perfectly fine, right? But I'm not trying to just insert myself here, because there are plenty of people where when I made my amends, they never wanted to see me again. And that's okay. That's part of my amends to them. You don't ever have to see me again. And I can make a promise to them that I won't do to anybody else what I did to them, and I won't repeat that, but at the end of the day, they don't have to see me again, right? Maybe that's all they wanted. But I'm giving them the opportunity to get free of me, to know that I'm not going to be in their life or whatever. You know, there are some people who want me more in their life. But anyway, I digress. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We may not always repair the relationship, right? I can go and I can clean up the damage, but a big thing in AA is keeping my side of the street clean, right? I'm cleaning up my side of the street. I can't clean up your side. That's your side. So when I go and I make these amends, like I was just saying, some people are going to be mad at me. They're still not going to get over it. I had one amends in particular where I went to go meet with this woman, and you know, I sat down with her, and she had been in the program before, but kind of was like tiptoeing in and out of it now, you know, doing her own thing with whatever she was doing. But she told me, she pulled out her NA book, and she reads to me the exactly what it says. And she says, except when to do so would injure them or others. She was like, you're harming me by making me think about this again. And I was like, oh, well, okay. So I took the opportunity to explain myself and to say, well, you know, what I did kind of gave you an idea, because I harmed her while I was in the program, right? Gave you an idea of what AA looks like, right? And I had this feeling that I wanted to apologize to you. I wanted to say that I'm sorry. But I also wanted to let you know that, like, this is not what AA looks like, right? This is not what this program taught me. And, you know, to let her know, because after I had done that to her, you know, I went back out there, and to let her know that. And she told me that that made a difference, and then told me she never, ever wanted to see me again and to go away forever. But you know what? I left that feeling great. That relationship probably isn't mended. I can't call her up and be like, hey, buddy, what you doing? That's not going to happen. That phone call won't get answered. But it's okay. I got free of it, right? I am totally free. I'm not hiding from this person. I'm not ashamed of this person. I'm not anything. I'm free of that. Right? If she wants to ever get free of that, that's on her inventory, and she can do that on her own time, right? But that has nothing to do with me, right? I did my part. So I'm not always going to manage to mend the relationship, right? It's not always going to get better, but that's okay. It doesn't have to. That's not going to stop me from getting free. There are going to be amends that I'm unable to make, right? Because people are either unwilling to hear from me or whatever. You know, God will put that person in my path when it's time to make that amend. I have to go to any lengths, right, to make this amend. If I go to any lengths and I still don't have this person in front of me, then I've done what I can and I leave it to happen on God's time, right? Some people are unwilling to meet with me. Some people are weird about it. I have some amends going on right now where they'll say, hey, yeah, totally, let's sit down, and then I don't hear from them for months, you know? There's nothing I can do about that, right? That is what it is, and I've cleaned my side of the street for now, and God will put that opportunity in front of me when he sees fit. We attempt to sweep away the debris which is accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. And I wrote, when I run the show, I cause harm. Right? When I run the show, I cause harm. We were talking about self-will a lot last time. And self-will is when I'm running on self-will, I'm being selfish, right? I'm looking out for myself first. And even when I have the best intent of other people in mind, when I'm looking out for myself at the end of the day, I'm always going to put myself first. And if you're in my way, I'm going to shove you out of the way. It reminds me of this one time that I had on my last ever run, you know, out there. I had an experience with this program before I did that, right? And I came out, and I remember sitting in the car with some kid who was using with me, and I said to him, I said, I figured it out, man. Like, this AA thing really worked for me for a while. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get high and drunk, and I'm going to also do AA. I'm going to be kind and loving toward all, but I'm also going to get high and drunk while I do it. Right? And that's going to work, and it's going to make it okay, because everyone isn't going to be mad at me this time. And I found that for me, at least, it is physically impossible for me to be kind while also doing drugs and alcohol. Right? Because if you stand in my way, I will topple you over. Right? You're in my way and you need to move. Right? Once I have that goal in my mind, once that obsession kicks off and the allergy, I will do anything to get you out of my way. So I literally cannot run my own life and be kind and loving toward all at the same time. At least in that area, it just doesn't work for me, right? It's not possible. And while I do this, I create a lot of harm, right? I'm like the alcoholic is like a tornado, right? Roaring through the lives of others. I'm creating harm everywhere I go, even if my intentions are great, which a lot of the time they are, right? In my mind, if you all follow my script, you'd be happier too, right? I have all of our best interests in mind because I know what's best for everybody, according to my mind. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning that we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. This is something that I need to remind myself and that I remind my sponsees of as well when we find unwillingness to make a specific amends, right? That we agreed earlier in this book, right, when we made that third step decision that we are willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol, right? And there are things that if I don't do, I'm not going to get that victory over alcohol, right? These things will eventually come back to bite me, right? The most minute and simple amends. The thing is that I have no idea which amends are important and which amends aren't, right? And the most minute, simple ones that I think don't matter at all could be the one that takes me out if I completely push it away and avoid trying to do it. We may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. You know, something that I get asked a lot by my sponsees and that I always wondered about myself is like, do I tell this person that I'm going to make an amends, right? Like that I'm going to sit down with you. And I am someone who really tries to plan out everything in my head and get the exact like thing right. If this is what I'm going to say, and then you're going to either say this or this, and then I'm going to counter with this and this. And that's how I do everything all the time. And it makes me very stressed out. But the same thing goes with amends, and I would always try to figure out and ask my sponsor, like, well, how do I tell them I'm going to make an amends? Like, then I have this experience before where, you know, people say, well, you don't owe me an amends, it's fine, don't worry about it, and then I'm like, well, what am I going to do now? And I plan this whole thing out. So it says to me that we don't have to tell everybody what exactly I'm going to do. Some people are unwilling to meet with me, so sometimes I need to tell them, hey, I want to try to make this right. But there are plenty of people that I don't have to do that with, and it tells me right here that we don't want to prejudice people, right, by, you know, people who might hate us. They talk about later, you know, leading with chin, right? Why lay ourselves open to be branded fanatics or religious bores, right? I don't need to go to every person who has a major resentment against me and tell them that I've gone religious, right? Or whatever they call it in the book, right? I don't have to talk about God the whole time, but the reason that it follows this up by saying after, we don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God when it will serve any good purpose. We are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense, right? And there's a reason for that, and it's because nine-step amends can turn into 12-step calls, right? I've seen it happen before. I've had it happen to friends. I've had it happen to myself, where all of a sudden this amends that I'm making turns into an opportunity to be of service, or it ends up giving this other person an opportunity to be of service, right? I have no idea what God has in store for me. So I should be willing to bring this up if I have to, right? Because some of these people might not know. And I've had people that I've reached out to and I've told them, you know, that this is what I'm doing. It's part of a spiritual program that I'm doing or whatever. And I had no idea. The reaction would be like, wow, you know, I've been having a problem with, you know, getting drunk and high too. Right? Like, what was that like for you? And you start telling them about it, right? And all of a sudden I start describing my alcoholism, and maybe it ends there, and all it gets is that get them to a meeting, right? Or get the idea in their head and plant the seed, right? But that's 12-step work right there, right? That's an opportunity that I would have robbed myself of and robbed this person of had I shied away from the fact that this is a spiritual program, right? And this is why I'm doing this. So it's not always a necessity, but I ought to be willing if I have to, right? It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. And for me, I had this one person in particular, an ex-girlfriend of mine, that I just loathed with every bone in my body, man. Like, I did not like this person. And I owed her an amends, obviously, because that's how I live my life, right? And pretty much every person I've ever had a relationship with, I owe an amends to. That's a good rule of thumb, by the way. Look at every relationship you've ever been in, you owe them amends. You owe them an amends. But I sat down with this girl finally over all this time, and I still, like, I did inventory a couple times, and I just still couldn't stand her. But I was willing to sit down and make an amends because I knew that I needed to do it to get free. And I could tell you two things. It says here at the bottom that we find it more beneficial to go to an enemy than to go to a friend. And I would have considered her an enemy at the time, although I like to think I don't have any enemies nowadays, or at least that's how I try to keep it on my side. It's probably not true, but So I sit down with this girl and I start making my amends to her, and sure enough, she apologizes back to me, right? She starts admitting her faults, right? And I really didn't expect that. I expected her to just sit there and let me talk about, well, all the things that I did and then be like, that's right, you did do that, bye. You know, but that's not what happened, right? She actually apologized right back to me. And in this amends, I started to find forgiveness towards her that I couldn't find in just doing what I had done before, right? And I wish I could say that it came that day and I was like, I'm no longer mad at her, I'm totally good. No, it didn't. It didn't. But over a little bit of time after that period, right, and doing a little bit more prayer and meditation and a little bit more inventory, I did actually find forgiveness towards this person. And I made this, like, I had this eye-opening moment where I realized that, ew, the thing that I did was that I tried to make her into something she couldn't possibly be, and that was God, right? I tried to make her into God and use her to keep sober and use her to keep me okay, and it doesn't work like that, and I can't do that. So no matter what she did, she was set up to fail, right? Because she couldn't possibly live up to what I tried to make her into be. But I couldn't see that. So no matter what way I looked at it, it was like, no, but she failed. She failed. She did me wrong, but it was because of the position that I put her in, right? And I finally saw that after all that. And I could tell you the second thing about this amends was that it really was more beneficial, because I still walked out of there that day, even though I was still a little annoyed with her after that. I walked out of there that day with so much freedom, with so much freedom. I felt so much better because I didn't have to hide from this person anymore. And when people talked about, you know, ducking behind bookshelves and hiding from people that they saw, I didn't have a lot of experiences where I would literally hide from people, but this person I would hide from. If I saw this person, I wanted nothing to do with her. I wanted her to get far away from me. I wanted to hide behind a shelf. I wanted her to not see me. I was done. And now I don't have that experience, right? I wish the best for her. And if I see her in public, I'll say hi, right? That's it. It's that simple, right? But something like that for me was just like, I couldn't comprehend it. I thought that I would live with this anger and hate forever, right? And this harm that I did to her. And I probably hurt her more than she could have hurt me. But I couldn't see that at the time until I really went and did this. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue, right? This is huge because, you know, I had a buddy who had an experience that he told me about where he tried to make an amends before he got to the ninth step, right? Which, by the way, to any newcomers, don't do that. Don't do that. It's a terrible idea for many reasons. But one of those is that we didn't learn all this stuff yet. I didn't see what my true wrong was in my fourth step and my fifth step, right? I didn't get free of these resentments, so I'm still angry at them. So all of a sudden, I have this desire to, and I still have it later on, but even more so, to criticize or argue with this person. And my buddy went over to this guy's house to go make an amends to him and ended up in a fist fight with him, and they had to call the cops to break him up, right? If I'm going in there and criticizing or arguing, I'm not cleaning up my side of the street. Now I'm taking your inventory, right? I'm not going to get free of this if I'm sitting here taking your inventory. That's not what this is about. It's the same thing on the fourth step, right? You know, the first three columns are all the stuff in my head. It's all crap, right? The last column is the column that matters. My part. What did I do? That's the thing that I can get free of, right? And that's what we're trying to do here too. So when I start pointing the finger at you, I've missed the whole point, right? You may have hurt me more than I hurt you. It doesn't matter. Right? I'm not here to point out what you did wrong. I'm here to get free of what I did and to give you the opportunity to get free of me. Right? That person may never apologize. That's okay. Right? This program is about forgiveness. Right? And I'm trying to give them the opportunity to have that gift of forgiveness. Right? And if they don't want to take it, that's okay. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile, page 78, can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own, right? Just like I was saying, I'm not here to sit and take your inventory and point out your flaws, because guess what? I could take everybody's inventory. I do it in my head all the time, right? So now when I'm making this amends, it's not about them. It's about me, right? This is about me. This is the thing that I'm trying to get free of. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own faults, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. And this is one of my favorite lines in this chapter, because it rung so true in my life, is that 9 times out of 10, amends go nothing like the way that I think they're going to go, right? I have this whole plan and idea, and this one's going to go like this, and I have mostly in my, like, now or soon column, right? These amends that are simple, easy ones. It's no big deal. Nothing's going to come of it, right? Maybe a friend that I stopped talking to because I was, you know, caught up in my using. And I've had one in particular that comes to mind where I reached out to this person, and it was exactly that. It was just that, oh, I was a bad friend. Stop talking to her. That's it. So I call her up to make an amends. I call her up to arrange us to sit down, because, you know, I was always told if when you're apologizing to someone, you look them in the eyes, you sit down and do it face to face, if possible, right? And she was unwilling to meet with me, which blew my mind. I was like, why on earth would you be unwilling to meet with me, right? What did I ever do to you? And but she said, I'll listen to you over the phone. So I said, okay, all right, we can do that. So I call her up on the phone and I say, hey, I was a bad friend, you know, I disappeared and I'm sorry. And is there anything that I missed, right? I was always told, actually, to avoid the words I'm sorry, right, to say I humbly apologize, because I'm sorry is meaningless coming out of this mouth, right? I've worn it to death. It means nothing. And to ask them if I've missed anything and then what I can do to make it right. And if they say nothing, push again, right? Because a lot of people will be polite and say nothing, but it's like, I'm not looking to get off scot-free. I'm looking to make this right. So I ask her, you know, did I miss anything? She says, no. Is there anything I could do to make it right? I push a little. No, no. Okay. Hangs up the phone. Done. Well, that was easy. 2 minutes later, my phone's ringing again, and she's calling me back. And I pick up the phone, and she tells me everything I've ever done to her. And she is yelling into the phone. She's, like, crying and telling me all these things. And I was like, oh, my God. I had no idea. And I sat on the phone with her for, I don't know, like 15 minutes. And we sat there and we talked about these things and I apologized for them. And I said, I had no idea you felt that way. I had no idea that I did that. I had no idea that that happened because of me. And she was telling me about how years later this was still affecting her. And I thought all I did was just disappear, right? I thought that's all I did, right? But after I hung up that phone, I got this sense of like relief, right? This freedom that we, you know, that I did all this harm and that I was hurting this person in a way that I had no idea about. And now not only did I just uncover it, but now I get free of it, right? I'm not to any lengths to make that right, right? You know, and now I could be cool with this person. Now I could show up in her life if she needs me to, right? You know, and that was amazing. That was this incredible eye-opening experience. I felt like I was floating afterwards, and I went into it thinking that it was nothing. It was just, you know, one of those stupid amends that, you know, you don't even think they're going to want to hear it, you know, because really, what did I ever do to you, right? Well, it turns out I did a lot, you know, 9 times out of 10, right? A lot of the time it goes the other way too, where I get these really hard ones that seem impossible and super weird, and I sit down with this person and I make an amends, and it's totally cool. And everything is fine. And I'll tell you something, really, when I do get like chewed out and somebody really tells me, those ones give me more freedom, right? That's just my experience with it. Those ones, I walk out of there really feeling like something was accomplished, you know? Because I realize that, you know, I really just hurt this person and now we get to make it right, you know? And there's a big thing about, you know, living amends too, which I'll touch on a little more later, but, you know, living amends when I continue to live my life, because amends are not about words. Talk is cheap. It means nothing, right? Coming out of my mouth, it means nothing particularly. When I'm making a living, amends is about the actions that I take, right? This is when we really get into action too, you know, and, I'm making this right by you by the things that I do. Right now, I'm asking you how I can make this right, and I'm vowing not to take this action again, but also to try to live up to these things, and particularly the people who are closest to me are the people that I hurt the most, right? Because they give me the opportunities to hurt them the most, and because I know in my sick, twisted brain that I can get back to what I was doing even when I hurt these people, right? Because I'm completely focused on myself, right? So when I make these amends, what I'm really doing is I'm showing these people that I've changed, right? I'm trying to make their lives easier, trying to make their lives better, right? The family and the home, all these different things. Me just staying sober is, at least, you know, according to this, right, that's not enough. It needs to be followed with more action. I need to be showing up, right? I need to be helping. I need to be kind and loving and trying to make these things up. If I owe money, I need to be paying it back, right? Right under this, it talks about owing money. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors, nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm, right? I learned something fairly recently, and this is something that I am still guilty of, is that if I have money and I'm spending it on myself, but I owe financial amends, I'm doing something wrong, right? It's not that if I'm putting gas in my car and doing that, of course I have to do those things. I have to survive. If people depend on me, I have to spend money on them. But when I'm going out and I'm buying, you know, fancy clothes or buying, you know, a video game or new stuff for myself, which I do all the time because I love spending, right? If I'm doing that and I owe financial amends, right, I feel that. And that does take a toll on my spiritual life, because I'll tell you, for a while, I would think I was doing nothing wrong but walk around feeling hollow, feeling like something was missing because I owe my mom money, right? I owe, you know, other people money. I owe these financial amends that I'm supposed to be paying that I haven't paid yet, right? I have this money. This money isn't meant to be spent on me, right? This is their money. And that's something that I really learned, kind of hits me to my core when I'm doing that. And it's something important that, you know, I pay these amends back, right? There really is freedom in that. You know, I always learned that if I spend my money doing God's work, God will make sure I have enough money to take care of myself, right? And that has always been my experience, right? That has always been my experience. When I'm spending money buying some newcomer food or paying financial amends back, especially if I really want that money because I have something I really want to buy, which I always do, right? When I do that, I definitely don't get to go buy that thing I wanted, but I'm eating, right? I have enough money to do what I need to do, to put gas in my car, to pay for the things I need to pay for, right? I have what I need, right? The rest is ego. The rest is self trying to divert me from this path, right? My ego is always trying to push me out of the way and get me to go away from where God is trying to get me to go, right? It's like Karen said last time, there's the two voices in my head, right? There's the ego that talks first and loudest, and then there's God, right? And when we get into 10 and 11, we talk about how we expand this God voice in my head and how I actually get to use my brain for thinking, which I was never able to do before because my thinking was unreliable, right? I get to rely on my brain. This book tells me that. That's amazing. I never thought I'd be able to do that. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. I always tried to put all my financial amends off till the end, too, because I was like, well, if I do that, then I'm going to lose all my money, right? I might as well wait until I have some more money so that I can, but I never have more money because I spend it all, right? And that might be a me problem, but I do that. I spend all my money. You know, you can ask my mom. I spend all my money. So I need to make these right away, and I need to start making payment plans with these people. And I found out that I am very surprised in how reasonable people are about these things, right? It says here, even the most ruthless creditors, right, might turn around and show us sympathy, might show us reason, I guess. I don't know the word I was thinking of, right? If I go and I humbly apologize to them and show willingness to try to make it right, right? These are the things that get me free. Right? My ego tells me that I need to spend this money on stuff for myself, right? Because that'll make me feel better. But those things aren't the things that make me feel better. If there's one thing I took out of this program, it is that I do not know what makes me feel better. End of story. I have no idea what makes me feel good and what makes me feel bad. And honestly, I've heard people say, take whatever you're thinking and do the opposite. It's actually kind of true. Literally the opposite of whatever I want to do is usually the right answer. Not always. It's not a great rule of thumb, but it typically is. I want to skip ahead a couple pages because I want to have time to get into 10, 11, and 12. But I do want to go stop at 83, and I want to go to the bottom of that page. At the very last paragraph is the ninth step promises, right? I only want to read the promises part because everybody probably knows it by heart because every single meeting reads it as the 12 promises, which is interesting, right? The 12 promises, it sounds great, 12, 12, 12, and 12, but we have like 400-something promises, right? If it was only 12 promises, that'd be kind of a bummer, right? It's like, yo, I literally, my whole life, I was suffering and all you have are 12 promises for me. No, there's way more than 12 promises, which is great. That's awesome, right? These are just the ninth step promises. That's another thing, too. Newcomers are like, I'm here. Why am I not getting these? They're ninth step, right? You got to do eight steps before them before you start getting those. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. There's the first promise right there. If I am painstaking, right? If I drag my feet, you know, and I'm half-heartedly doing this, I will not be amazed before I'm halfway through, right? And I've dragged my feet through this before, and I've done this half-heartedly, right? And it didn't work for me. I was not amazed. I was not amazed at all, right? I wasn't even amused. But if I put work into this, and if I do this as best I can, right? And sometimes as best I can is still really me pushing through it. That's okay, right? I will be amazed before I am halfway through. Before I am halfway through with this amends process, I will start to experience this freedom. And one of those things for me was desire to keep making more amends, right? Which sometimes is really hard to get yourself to do. I have seen more people than anybody besides maybe like the fourth step struggle with making amends. They're terrified to make amends. I was scared out of my mind to make amends. It was the scariest thing you could possibly ask me to do because I had to go to you or you and stand in front of you and tell you what I did wrong and hear what you had to say, right? That was terrifying. I couldn't even look people in the eyes until I did my fifth step. Now I have to talk to you and tell you horrible things that I did that maybe you didn't even know about, you know? We will be amazed before we're halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. Yup. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. Right? How amazing is that, too? Not only will I not regret my past, and one of those things is like, how could I not regret my past? Have you seen my past? It's horrible. Right? But I won't regret the past because my past made me exactly who I am right here, right now, today. Right? I would not be this person. I would not be sitting here if everything that happened in my past did not happen. Right? There are some things that I've always wondered, oh, what? It wouldn't have gotten me here. I am here for a reason. God got me here for a reason, and all those things had to happen in order to get me here. You know, whatever your idea of a higher power is, set all that aside, I wouldn't be here if something different had happened, right? I do not regret the past, and I don't want to hide from it anymore because my past is now experience that I can use to help a newcomer, right? Those horrible things that I did, that a lot of them, you know, I can laugh about them now because they're not hanging over my head anymore, but I can also use them to help somebody else, somebody who thinks they're the only person in the world who ever did that or ever went through that. I can tell them that they're not, right? That's amazing. That's a gift, right? That came through doing this. And as well as a new freedom and a new happiness. I kind of glossed over that. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. You know, I saw that and I was like, comprehend the word serenity. I know what serenity means. But no, like now I have this idea of like serenity, right? I will finally experience it for the first time in my life. And I never experienced serenity before I came into these rooms, before I started doing this process. I didn't know what serenity was, right? I had no idea what it felt like to be at peace, right? I had no idea what it felt like to close my eyes and not be going crazy and not have to have the music blasting or the radio blasting or the TV blasting just so I can't hear this guy talking and screaming in my ear, right? I had no idea what that felt like, you know? For as early as I can remember, that voice was in my ear driving me absolutely crazy. Right, telling me things that I didn't want to hear, telling me how horrible I was, telling me how miserable I was. Right, I did not have that experience of just peace. Right, people would talk about meditation was how you get there. Believe me, I was a stoner kid for a little while. I tried meditation, okay? I tried sitting there and just om and doing all these things, and my mind drove me crazy, okay? It didn't work for me, right? I finally knew serenity and knew peace when I could sit in meditation. I could sit in a quiet room and just be. Right? And just be present and just exist right here, right now. I wanted to be as far away from right here, right now as possible. Right? Right here, right now was never, ever okay for me. Right now I can appreciate this moment. No matter how far down the scale that we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. Right? This is actually one of the few times there is a scale. Right? There is a scale. Some of us, you know, I find that me, at least, when I came in here, I thought I was too far gone. But I've also encountered earlier experiences of mine when I came into AAA where I thought I was nowhere near far gone enough, right? It tells me no matter how far down the scale I've gone, no matter what the outside of my life looks like, we will see how our experience can benefit others, right? I will see how what I've gone through can help another person, right? To the person who came in here, right? I came in here young. I was out there for what? 6 years, right? That's not that long compared to a lot of people, but I've learned how my experience can benefit others, right? I've learned how my bottoms can benefit others. I've ran into people who've been out there and they think they never would ever have a shot, but those people can help an enormous amount of people, right? They've spent years and years and years out there, right? No matter how far down the scale I've gone, I learn how I can help another person because there is always somebody like me who's coming into this room and they think they're unique, right? Because I think every single alcoholic thinks they're so different from the rest of us, and it's what you guys would never get what I'm going through. But it's like I'm not, right? And I can use my experience to help that other guy who walks in feeling the same way that I did, feeling as broken and as unique and as different as I did. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. I pitied myself 100% of the time, and I felt useless 100% of the time. I felt like I failed everything, that I couldn't hold up my end to anything, and a lot of the time I couldn't. Right? And all of a sudden, this starts disappearing, and I start feeling useful, right? I start gaining this purpose, right? This is getting me ready and getting into, you know, carrying out God's will in step 12, right? When I can be useful, and I have this desire to be useful, right? I never cared about helping somebody else. I couldn't even help myself. How was I supposed to help someone else? And why would I want to, right? All of a sudden, I get this feeling of usefulness, right? Like, I can actually go out there and help another alcoholic, help another person, right? I can help beyond alcoholics. I can hold doors for people. I can smile at strangers. I can, you know, tell somebody that they look nice that day, whatever. Like, you have no idea the effect of the little things that you say to people has on their day. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows, right? The same thing as before. Self-seeking will slip away, Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us, right? I'm afraid of everybody. And of economic insecurity, it's funny how specific that is, but we talk about these financial amends, and for me and my experience with that is really the only thing I could speak on is that when I started paying out these financial amends, and I still owe plenty of them, but when I started paying some of these out, right, I started to realize, and this also happened in step 12 too, the same thing that I just said before, right, that God makes sure I have enough to take care of myself and I have enough to be okay, and there are people who take care of me as well, right? This fear of that I won't have enough, at least in my experience for this, because I'm paying out this money, it went away. Right, I realized that I was going to be okay. Right, and like I said, I'm not saying, you know, make sure your kids don't have food on the table so you can pay financial amends. No, of course not. Right, but if I'm out there buying new shoes, what's more important? Right, freedom or looking really fresh? Right. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. Right, baffle me. Every situation baffled me. I say this each time too, but every situation baffled me. I had no idea how to deal with anything. I had no idea how to talk to other people, how to have relationships with other people, how to be by myself, how to be alone, how to be in a group. Like, I didn't know anything. Everything baffled me, and now all of a sudden, I have this intuition, right? This God voice in my head that shows me how to do these things. I don't know how to speak in public in front of people, right? I don't know how to do that. Right? But all of a sudden, like, I slowly find myself able to do these things, right? I don't know how to have conversations, right? But now I can talk to new people, right? All of a sudden, these things start to work themselves out almost, right? As if I had done nothing, but all of a sudden these things start to come, right? And it takes time and it comes with practice, sure, but like, all of a sudden, God is doing for me what I cannot do for myself. I got a little ahead of myself there, but we will intuitively know how to, we suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves, right? And they ask us, are these extravagant promises? Kind of, right? They kind of are, but they happen anyway, right? Right, Patty Ellen?
Yes.
They will always, always materialize if we work for them. And I love emphasizing that word if, because it's like, I used to sit here and be like, all right, materialize, come on. Come to Papa, right? And it wasn't happening. It wasn't happening, right? If we work for them, right? This is showing me how to work for them. It's giving me all this detail on how to get these things, but I must give myself to this process and do this work and have this experience. This thought brings us to step 10. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. I highlight and underline this line for myself because I have had periods in my sobriety and I go through these things where all I'm doing is praying and meditating and taking inventory and I don't feel any better, right? And I realize that, I'll go out and, you know, do step work too, but I realize that a lot of the time for me personally, it's very easy for me to sleep on my amends. And it says we vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past, right? Another reason I point that out is because this is telling me I don't have to make all my amends and then start doing step 10. I get into amends and I start doing my 10th step right away. I do it as I clean up my past, right? Now I've had this kind of portal cracked open right in my chest and all of a sudden there is this presence of, you know, a higher power that I have this connection to, right? Now we need to work on expanding it, right? And I always say if I'm not moving forward, I'm moving backwards, right? I'm moving back towards a drink or forward toward God, right? And I'm starting to expand this. And 10 and 11 is now my daily reprieve, right? My daily expansion of this connection to God. And the reason that I need to do this is because when we do our fourth step, we look at our whole life or, you know, since our last fourth step or whatever, and I'm getting rid of these defects of character, right? That doesn't mean they're permanently gone. They come right back. Right? They come back and all of a sudden I have these same defects of character plaguing me that were plaguing me before, right? Because I need to keep cleaning, right? You don't clean your house once and then just leave it there and it's like two years later when there's dirt and crap everywhere, you know, all of a sudden I'm like, what happened? Did I do it wrong? No, right? I have to keep doing it, right? I didn't eat wrong yesterday because I'm hungry today. I just eat again, you know? That's how these things work. And for me, this is food and water, right? And I need to do these things on a daily basis, right? Because these defects pop right up. And I have, and the way that I've learned to do step 10 is for a long time I did it. I kind of got confused on the directions in the book. And I took the 11th step directions on page 86. And I confused them with 10th step, right? And I said, okay, this 11th step thing over here when we retire at night, that's my 10th step. You know, I do my inventory at night. And there's probably nothing wrong with doing that, and that probably works too. But I kind of found a way that worked better for me was I started doing 10 steps throughout the day, right? My sponsor had me get this app, right, where you could take your inventory on it, and then you could timestamp it and send it so they know when you sent it, right? It's fantastic. It's really good at holding me accountable. And I do this throughout the day because if I look at it like this, if I catch a resentment at 9 o'clock in the morning, as if I'm ever up at 9 o'clock in the morning, if I catch a resentment at 11 o'clock in the morning, right, and then I catch five more throughout the day and I don't do anything else about them, right, all of a sudden it's 10 o'clock at night and I am fuming and I am miserable and I have no idea what's going on. I'm like, but I don't know what happened, right? I'm letting these resentments and letting these fears build up throughout my day. And by the end of the day, I'm going crazy, right? Whereas when I pull out my phone and I do this inventory and I pray and I direct my attention to where I can help somebody else, all of a sudden I get free of them one at a time, right? So that I'm not fuming and trying to kill somebody by the end of the day, right? Because the truth is that when I come home with all these resentments built up, right? And, you know, my brother comes in and says something that rubs me the wrong way, all of a sudden he gets hit with the force of 50 resentments, right? And I want to kill him. Right? That can't be happening. That doesn't work for me. Right? So I get free of these things along the way. So that way, that doesn't happen. Right? I can deal with each of them at once. Right? Because otherwise, I'm just having a repeat of what my life was like before without a fourth step. So this is my daily 4 and 5. Right? I share it right away. I pray on it right away. You know? I offer it to God right away. And then I go help somebody else. Right? Because that's how I get free of all these things. Right? That's how I get out of here. Right? Is to get onto somebody else's stuff and help them with that. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. We are expanding this God connection for a lifetime. Right? This is a daily reprieve that I continue every day. Right? It's not a one-time thing. You know, there is no just finishing the 12 steps. Right? I live in the steps. Right? This is a lifestyle. It's a process. It's something that I do. And we can go through them over and over. But I live in 10, 11, and 12. And 9. You live in 9, too. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. So when I catch these things, when I'm afraid, when I'm resentful, and it pops up at once, I ask God to remove them. Right? Not God removes them at once. At once I ask. Right? I ask at once. God removes them when he sees fit. And I used to read it the other way, right? Oh, God, take it at once. It says at once he's going to take it. No, I ask at once. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed someone, right? I'm doing a 5. I'm admitting it to God, to myself, and another human being, right? And make amends quickly. If I harm someone, I'm doing 8 and 9. I guess just 9. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is my code, right? Is our code, not my code. Well, it is my, whatever. Step 12, right? All of that is done right there. This is my 10-step instructions if I want to break it down as simple as possible. This little paragraph right there that we just read, those are my 10-step instructions, right? And there are a million different ways to do it, but that is what it looks like in this book. And it's super broken down and simple just for me right there because I get lost in the minutia of it otherwise. And then we have our 10-step promises that I'll read a few of, but I'm not going to read all of them for time's sake because I want to get to 12. For by this time, sanity will have... And we cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as if from a hot flame. React sanely and normally, and we will find this has happened automatically. Right? Automatically. I didn't do anything. It just comes. Right? That's amazing. Right? That after that, it says, you know, we are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. When I'm in meditation, sometimes I just like to think about that, safe and protected, right? I'm in this little bubble that God has put me in. We talked about earlier that I do not have a defense within me that is me against drugs and alcohol. God is my defense against drugs and alcohol, right? God is the thing that is keeping me sober, and he has now put me in this little protected bubble, right? Where I can go where I am needed. I can go to a sponsee's house, and when I open the door and he hands me a bag of pills and says, please throw this out, I can do that without pocketing a few. Right? I can do that without licking my fingers after I'm done wiping whatever it is out of there. Right? That's protected. That's safe. I can go to a bar if my friend's having a party there, right? And it's his birthday and I want to show up for my friend, right? If a sponsee is stuck in a crack house and he has no way to get out, I can go in there and help him. And the last thought on my mind is, why don't I sit down and join you? That's a miracle, right? That's God working in my life. Step 11 is my daily prayer and meditation, right? Going to the bottom of 85, step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It's as simple as that, right? Whatever God that I have come to understand is what I'm now starting to have a relationship with. I got to know this God. And the fifth step, we thank God for getting to know him or her better. And now I'm doing... And I try to have my guys do this from the beginning, but at this point I need to be doing daily prayer and meditation, right? The way I look at it, I used to think meditation is stupid. I don't need to do that. I just need to pray. And for a while I did do that, and it was fine. It was whatever until I felt something missing. And somebody said to me that prayer is asking and talking to God, and meditation is listening. And all you're doing, Peter, is sitting there and yammering, and you're not hearing a word of what God has to say. And I'm like, damn, you know? And all of a sudden, when I sit in meditation, I find the right answers come, right? They come if we sit and we take the time. They don't always come right away, but all of a sudden, this God intuition, they call it God conscious in the book, starts to come to me, right? And it tells me, it promises me that I begin to rely on my thinking, right? Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely on it. I get to rely on my thinking. My thinking was useless for so long, right? And now all of a sudden, I get to rely on it. Right? There is this God conscious in my mind where I can trust inspiration to come when I need it to. In meditation, I can trust that the right answers will come to me. And I am blown away still every single time when I go into prayer and meditation and I ask God where he needs me or what I need to do about some situation, and the answer comes and I do it and it works. Right? Especially if it's something that I would never have dreamed of doing. You know? All of a sudden and I do it and it works. It's like, you know? And all of a sudden, I experience like this feeling that like there's somebody taking care of me, right? I want to skip ahead because I only have like 5 minutes, and I want to talk about step 12. But I wrote on the very last page of Into Action that all previous action is worthless if I don't give it away. It is completely worthless. All of this has been done for nothing if I do not give it away, right? The one thing that I was taught is if for me to be given all of this so freely by a person who asks nothing of me except that I give it away, for me to get all of these things back and then not give it away is selfish, right? It's selfish. For me to do that is selfish. I took and took and took and gave nothing my entire life, and now it's my turn to give it back, and I have something to give, right? For a while, I did not have much to give. Nobody really wanted anything I had. Now, there's something that I have to give away, and it is my duty to give that back. Right? We are uniquely qualified. The ex-problem drinker, properly armed with facts about his or herself, is uniquely qualified to help an alcoholic in ways that nobody else can. Doctors, their parents, their family, nobody. Right? You know? We don't have a monopoly on all that is God and alcoholism, right? But we do have this unique ability to help other alcoholics. So it is my duty to give that away. On page 89... the first sentence is, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail, right? When everything I'm trying to do, when I'm in my head, when everything I'm trying to do fails, intensive work with another alcoholic always saves the day, right? I had experiences early on in sobriety where I had been in here before, so I had, you know, been through the steps, and I had even had a sponsee before. So when I came around this time, it didn't really take us as long because we kind of blasted through it. And by like 35 days or something, you know, my sponsor was like, go sponsor people, swim in the deep end. And I was, you know, scared out of my mind. But eventually I found some kid who maybe made the mistake, I'm not sure, of being willing to let me sponsor him, right? So I remember suffering this one day, and I don't know what I had been up to, but probably nothing good. And, you know, the obsession is like on me, and I'm thinking about it, and it's driving me crazy, and I'm depressed, and I'm miserable. And this kid, I give this kid a call, and I say, hey, you want to go do some step work? And he's like, yeah, sure. So we go, and we meet, and while I'm driving there, I'm just thinking about how miserable I am, how life isn't worth living, all these things. And I sit down with this kid, and we just start reading, right? And I just start reading the book to him, and we talk about this stuff, and he asks questions, and we do all this. And I'll tell you, I left there feeling like I had never felt bad to begin with. It was like I couldn't even believe, it was like a whole new day. I couldn't even believe that I had felt miserable when I walked in there. And not only that, I couldn't believe that, like, I was even, like, obsessing over it, and it was just gone, right? The idea to pick up a drink, to pick up a drug was so foreign. As soon as I walked out of there, it was like a complete shift like that. It was amazing. It was incredible. It worked when I felt like nothing else was going to work, when I was certain that it wasn't going to. And I wish I could tell you that this kid is sober today, but he's not, right? And the reason that I bring that up, because I pray to God, I hope he comes back. He's an amazing guy. The reason that I point that out is because he doesn't need to stay sober for me to stay sober, right? That kept me sober. That saved my life. He probably saved my life that day, and he's still out there using, right? He helped me more than I helped him, right? The point is that I sit down with these guys, and I give this back, and all I can do is give, right? I can't force him to take it, right? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. I don't like calling people horses, but you know what I mean. You know, I wish he was here today, but, you know, he's still alive. But I wish he was here in this room, you know, but it kept me sober, right? And time again, this happens again and again and again. Sitting down with a newcomer always does it for me. When they say intensive work, you know, I'm talking about sitting down with the book, right? Taking them through these steps, you know, hearing a fifth step, right? These are things that we do, and we don't ask for anything in return because they're already giving me more than I could possibly ask for, right? And it tells us later in this chapter to let them know that too, you know, because I've really had sponsees who are just nice, solid dudes, you know, who are like, you know, oh, please, let me give you like $50 for gas or something. Let me give you this. Let me give you that. No, I don't want it, right? I don't want it because you're already giving me more than you could possibly give me, right? And we have to explain that to them because we don't want people feeling guilty. And I'm sure there's other reasons too, but mostly it's because like this guy, I don't want him to feel guilty, right? I want him to know that he's helping me, right? This is mutually exclusive. I'm not trying to play him. I'm not trying to get anything from him, because the way my mind worked when I got here is every single one of you was trying to play me, right? Because that's what I was doing. I was trying to get something from you. I wanted you to give me something. I wanted your attention. I wanted your whatever. I'm not even going to, I wanted something, right? And I always assumed that everybody else was the same way, that there's no way somebody's genuine. Right? I used to think when people in AA offered me rides home, because I came in here when I was 16, I thought you guys were child predators, right? I did. I thought people were trying to abduct me when they said, hey, like, you know, I just got my driver's license back. Like, here, come on home. I was like, no. But, you know, as I started to realize, like, you know, that's not the case, right? We're doing this to keep ourselves sober, and that's amazing. That's a beautiful thing. But I need to let people know that. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can, right? Uniquely qualified, right? And there's that line that I quoted before, you know, that the ex-problem drinker properly armed with facts about themselves, right? That's an important part right there. Not just any ex-problem drinker. An ex-problem drinker properly armed with facts. When we get to this point in the book, we are properly armed with facts about ourselves. When I am in this point of the book, I am not ready to sponsor somebody because while I am an ex-problem drinker and I do know some things, the facts aren't there, right? And I don't know exactly what's going on either, right? And I can't give something away if I don't have it, right? If I don't have it, I cannot give this away to you, right? If I haven't had this experience yet, I have nothing to share with you, and it's the blind leading the blind, right? And that doesn't work out for anybody. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill, right? Life will take on a new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives, right? I used to, and this is the last thing I'm going to say, right? I used to despise the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous because I saw you people laughing and, like, you know, you'd go and I'd go to young people meetings or something, so people were like my age, you know? And I hated every single one of them. I was like, why are you so happy? Why are you smiling? Why are you hanging out? And I did not feel anything like a part of it until I actually started doing this, right? I used to just show up and loathe everybody, and I started doing this and getting this new attitude. And all of a sudden, they say God creates the fellowship that you crave, right? From working with sponsees to having sponsee brothers, right? To doing all these different things, to trying to be of service, I made a host of friends that I would have never thought to go and talk to, right? They might have even been people that I would have never even used with. I would have been like, oh, I don't know, I don't trust these people, whatever. But all of a sudden, I have all these different friends, right? I know all these different people just from trying to be of service, right? To trying to get out of myself. I actually have one last thing, you know, where I've had this experience where I might have shared this before. I don't remember. You could stop me if I did. But I had this guy where I was basically suffering. I was super anxious. I was having like a panic attack or something. And I went to a meeting because I was told to throw myself into this work. And I go to this meeting, and there's this, they say, who's a new, you know, who's less than 90 days? This guy puts up his hand, right? And this is a good meeting that I respect. There's lots of people who usually run at the newcomers. But at the end of this meeting, nobody went to this guy. And I told myself, I was like, I need to go help this guy because I'm going to go crazy if I don't, right? So I run up to this guy. I start talking to him, you know. I ask him if he needs a sponsor. I start working with him. And like 2 weeks later, he tells me, he was like, you know, I only went to AA because my therapist told me to do 90 meetings in 90 days. This was like my fifth meeting and I was about to give up. I was done. Nobody had helped me, nothing. And I told myself, I'll wait outside for 5 minutes while I smoke this cigarette. 5 minutes. And if nobody comes up and talks to me, if I don't find a sponsor, I'm done. I'm never coming back. Right? And he's like, but you came up to me, man. He was like, I really thank you for that. I have this, he had issues talking to other people. It was really hard for him, like particularly not just alcoholic hard. And it was like it blew my mind because literally the only reason I went up there was because I was suffering. I was miserable and I knew helping this guy would make me feel better. It's like God has a whole purpose behind this thing that I'm not even aware of. And sometimes I get to get in on that just to feel grateful for it. And loads of times I don't even know what he had going on. But now I get this trust and this faith that, you know, God's taken better care of it than I ever could. Thank you guys for letting me share. Yeah.